This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. A lot of fun having Mike Palm in studio to end out hour number two. But always a treat when we get to catch up with Rachel Dorey, CTO of Betalytics. Joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. Give her a follow at Rachel Dorey on X. And Rachel, we couldn't wait to talk to you this week. Obviously, the biggest news, the bombshell news out of Toronto is that Mitch Marner is out of Toronto, now out here in the desert at Las Vegas. I can just see the smile on your face here. And it's something that we talked about after they got eliminated. And you had said right here on the show that this marriage had to end, that it just was not going to last. And now I guess they heard you, Rachel, and it's over. What do you make of that seismic move of Marner out of Toronto to Las Vegas?
Yeah, listen, we knew that this was coming. I mean, Mitch Marner, by his own admission and in probably one of the dumbest things that somebody could have said that he was asking players of the Las Vegas Golden Knights at Four Nations, which happened in February, about what it's like to play in Las Vegas. So not only was this guy completely checked out of being a Toronto Maple Leaf and we knew that this was going to end, he might have been checked out in February. And if that's the case, and then he exercises his contractual right to not waive his no trade clause, like, all you're doing is giving the fan base more ammo to dislike you even more than a lot of them already do. And let's not get this twisted. Mitch Marner is an elite hockey player. He is one of the best hockey players in the entire National Hockey League, and you're not replacing that. But here's the problem. All of the crap that he comes with, everyone's done with it, right? Everyone's done with the whole, my dad is walking around saying that I'm as good as Connor McDavid. Everyone is done with Darren Ferris, who is his agent, who has every single prominent media member in his back pocket, basically shilling for him. Everyone is done with his security guard emailing them and sending him DMs and all of that kind of stuff. They're done with it. And part of this is because no one's saying Mitch Marner is a bad person, because he's not. Seems like an absolutely fine human being. The problem is when you're making that much money in a hockey hotbed in Toronto and you have an entourage that is acting like that, you have no choice but to perform at a Conn Smythe level, or everyone is going to say you are not worth the headache. And I think at the end of the day, it was clearly that Mitch Marner decided Toronto probably wasn't for him. And I think part of that is he can't really take the heat when he underperforms. And he also doesn't seem to have the spine to tell his entourage to maybe quiet down so it takes some of the heat off of him. So I look at this and I think he's going to perform well in Vegas. I have no doubt about that. But I don't think he did himself any favors in the press conference by saying that he kind of knew 2 years ago that he was willing to take it to the end, and then that he was asking people about it at Four Nations. Like, then he comes back after the trade deadline and says, oh yeah, I'm locked in on playing for the Maple Leafs. Okay, so you're a liar at that point. And I just, all in all, I mean, it's best for the Maple Leafs, it's best for Mitch, and as far as I'm concerned, good riddance.
All right, Rachel, well said. And again, for people that are just joining us, I just want to shout you out too for a great article you have up on ESPN.com about the NHL draft grades. And I'll segue from not only that, because you have a free agency report card, and we'll stay in Toronto, because I think you're probably on one side of the fence for what they did in the draft, but more so maybe on the more positive side in free agency. So Marner gone now, but did they do themselves well to bring back some really key contributors here, trying to get back in the fight here for 2025?
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I think when you look at what the Maple Leafs did, part of the issue with the Maple Leafs is they had a really unbalanced roster and they were paying a lot of guys at the top of the lineup. Getting John Tavares signed at less than $5 million after he scored nearly 40 goals this year is genuinely outrageous. And there better not be a bad word spoken about him in Toronto ever again, because that contract, he could have gotten almost double that on the open market. And so that's called taking less because you want to win. But Matthew Knies, that extension was absolutely critical. He, by his own admission, said he was never going to sign an offer sheet, and that's fine. But 6 years is pretty well long term. And you have yourself a situation where he is turning into one of the premier power forwards in the game. And that's a very good contract. My model had him on a 6-year deal at nearly $9 million. And so when you look at this in the sevens, like, this is really tidy work by the Leafs front office, getting basically the equivalent of Matthews or of Mitch Marner's money for Knies and Tavares. And yeah, Mitch Marner's great, but I'll take John Tavares and Matthew Knies over one Mitch Marner any day of the week. So I was really happy with what they did there after an abysmal weekend at the draft.
Yeah, and by the way, Toronto's number has been, after the Marner deal, it's been shrunk. They're down to 14-1 here. So they've been taking some money here when you look ahead to the future next year in the futures market. Meanwhile, the bad. What's good? There's got to be some bad. Maybe not good news for LA hockey fans, Rach. What have you not liked so far of what the Kings have done in free agency?
Everything. Like, not kidding. Everything. I took a future immediately on LA to miss the playoffs the moment all of these contracts were signed, because I was like, oh my God, this is horrendous. As a team, LA did the worst. There were definitely a couple of other worse contracts signed by other teams, but like Brian Dumoulin at $4 million a year, my model has him valued at $1 million per year. So paying a guy four times his value, not ideal. Cody Ceci is being paid more than John Tavares, which is a choice, and it's not a good one. You're paying $8.5 million for what will likely amount to your bottom pair. Not a good idea. And term, I have this rule. You don't give term and trade protection to players that don't play in your top six forwards or your top four D. And LA went out and gave 3 years and 4 years to two guys who are going to be in their bottom pair. Then they got Yoel Armia. I don't necessarily mind this deal. Like, it's fine, but the reality is there were better players available. The only one that is remotely acceptable is Corey Perry, because I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to bring in some playoff snarl. Corey Perry has been torturing them against the Oilers in the playoffs. So like, that 1 year, $2 million, probably a little bit of an overpay, but like, I understand it. But when you spend $25 million in cap space the way that LA did, I don't know how you don't get an F, like, honestly. And then you look at Tanner Jeannot in Boston, 5 years, $17 million. Brad Marchand was their captain and played in the top six and was legitimately good. Tanner Jeannot had one good season and had 13 points last year, is going to play on the fourth line, and is making $3.5 million. That is too expensive for a third line player, let alone a fourth line player. And like I said, you do not give 5 years of term to somebody who plays on the fourth line. Like, I just, Boston said, oh, we're going to try and do a retool. This is not how you do that. Drafting James Higgins, fantastic, great job. This contract is not that. We'll just go with that one.
Yeah, and the Kings, as you mentioned, Rach, 3-1 to not make the postseason. So still some great value out there if you want to jump on it. Speaking of value, the defending champs are bringing pretty much the band back. And I mentioned this to Dave. From being in many clubhouses, Rach, I have not seen in a long time a team that loves to be together as much as they do, is very outspoken about it. And hey, when you win Stanley Cups, that's a very easy excuse. But it feels like they genuinely love being together. That being said, Bill Zito said, chips to the middle. We're going to try and keep this dynasty going as long as possible. I know Aaron Ekblad is going to be top of mind for you on a thumbs up for Florida. As they have kind of gone through the contracts they've put together now, are there going to be some that are going to be bad in the back end? And this is potentially a retirement home in surprise here on the back end of some of these deals.
Yeah, so the Aaron Ekblad deal, like, let's face it, this guy was going to get $8 million on the open market. And does the state tax thing have some level of importance here? Yes, it does. But I think in this specific case with the Florida Panthers, Bill Zito's ability to convince his guys and to treat them well enough for them to believe that they should be taking less to keep their group that they really like together cannot go unnoticed. This guy can't win a General Manager of the Year award for God knows what reason, and he really deserves it. The fact that he was able to sign Ekblad, sign Bennett, and then we'll get to Marchand in a second, but like, Aaron Ekblad definitely left at least $2 million a year on the table, which over the span of 8 years is $16 million. Like, that is not an insignificant amount of money. And I think it really speaks to the actual program that Bill Zito and Sonny Mehta and their staff are building there, that guys want to be there. And that's important. Then when you look at Brad Marchand, I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs were investigated last year for Chris Tanev's contract being like too long. And is it cap circumvention? Brad Marchand's contract runs until he's 43 years old, which is much older than Chris Tanev will be. And so I'm not really sure how that contract is necessarily allowed. But Bill Zito knows his way around the CBA, knows his way around the cap, and got it done. And that's the difference between teams who win and teams who don't, is they have players and managers who, one, know what they're doing, two, are good team players, but three, know how to exercise the loopholes. And that matters. It matters when you have someone who is that good. And speaking of someone who is that good, Eric Tulsky in Carolina getting Logan Stankoven signed for 8 years at $6 million a year is absolutely incredible. That guy is going to be, by the time cap inflation and everything goes up, he's going to be a $10 million player by the time year five on that contract hits. Just an absolutely incredible deal. I love what Carolina is doing. And if they get Nikolai Ehlers, they're going to be a problem again. So it's rare that Carolina makes a free agency mistake, and doesn't seem like they did that either.
So we can all understand why Florida, right now, the shortest shot on the board, 6-1, to repeat and do it 3 years in a row and bring that cup, keep that cup in Sunrise. Rachel, we always appreciate the conversation. We'll do it again soon. When we come back, much more to get to. We're going to talk some baseball as well with Kevin Franson later on this hour.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Enjoyed the conversation with Rachel Dory, as we always do. Didn't realize that we are, sometimes we can be seen up there and heard north of the border in Canada. So to all of our friends up there in Canada, I don't know, they probably don't do anything in the 4th of July, like we're going to do, right? They're not going to do anything.
Well, I mean, Toronto, I think Toronto's hosting the Angels. So you get both anthems.
Now, they just said Canada Day. Fireworks. Right? Wasn't Canada Day today? Canada Day was 2 days ago, I think?
A rare win. They've not been very good on Canada Day in many years. So 16-29, I think, all time on Canada Day now. But it is a spectacle, buddy. Got to cover a few of those games. And just to see the sea of red. And the Maple Leaf, wear the Reds on that day for the Blue Jays. So very, very cool to see.
And we have tickets on the Toronto Maple Leafs next year. So we're Team Canada. Like, let's get this thing done. Let's break the curse. First time since 1993. There's no curses in college football in Texas, right? I mean, their storied program. Everybody's going to tell you Texas is back. That's been a talking point for years. I think with Sark now, can we honestly say, yeah, Texas is all the way back. This is a team now that's going to college football playoffs year after year with the expansion now in college football. I think people had questions about Sark and whether or not he was going to be the right guy. Before we get to the quarterback situation there, which looks really good, obviously, are we now to that point with Steve Sarkisian that we say, yeah, he is the face of Texas football. It's working there. It's not Ohio State in that they've won it with Ryan Day. But am I amiss? Of course there's pressure on Sark to win at Texas, to win everything, not just get to the college football playoff. But it felt like for Ryan Day at Ohio State, if it didn't happen, there might have been changes. We're not to that point with Sark in Texas, are we?
No, and again, you see a lot of times that top assistants end up getting opportunities to be head coaches in other spots. And I want to say, for our friends down there in SEC country, Texas has the longest tenured staff, like as a unit.
Yeah.
I think upwards of 4 years now, it's been the same head coach, coordinators, things of that nature. So guys haven't left, and obviously the buy-in is what it is there. So yeah, is Sark the face of the program? Absolutely. Has he been doing it right? And again, they're going to spend a boatload of money in NIL this year for their roster, much in the same way Ohio State did last year. So yeah, he's doing it right, getting guys to want to be there. And that's the other part of it too, with Arch Manning, is you know, you, I think, brought up the point weeks ago, or maybe even during the NFL draft, of if you're looking to bet those future markets, yep. Remember, Shedeur Sanders was the odds on favorite to be the number one overall selection. Not even close. Arch Manning may get more money to stay
yes.
at Texas than what potentially the bonus could be the number one overall pick. So something to factor in here as you look at Texas futures up and down the ladder.
I mean, we can go back to Peyton, right? When Peyton was at Tennessee and everybody just assumed he's going to come out, then he goes out and leads the band there, Rocky Top, right? And he comes back for another year. It didn't end up with what they thought that it was going to be, but still, Peyton wanted to stay. I wonder if Arch is going to be the same way. Now, Paul Feinbaum, who's of course a notable voice when it comes to college football here, did make a comparison for Arch to Tim Tebow in Tebow's run for the Gators, which ended with a couple of national championships back then for Tebow in those Gator teams. Now, took some flack for that, for saying that this is what it's going to be. I remember Beano Cook, you want to go way back in the day at Notre Dame, and you know, it's not going to be one, not two, it's going to be three Heisman trophies. So sometimes we pontificate a little bit about some of these quarterbacks, and they don't always materialize the way we think they are. But when that last name is Manning, by the way, win total sitting at 9.5, juiced heavily to the over at $1.70, 12-game schedule, so you get two hiccups and you can still cash that ticket. It's still the first time for Arch. I think it's going to look fine. And we've seen him, you know, for Quinn Ewers last year, he'd come in when Ewers was injured and it looked pretty good. What do you make of Arch in that pressure, that royalty of that last name? How does that translate in year one as a starter?
Oh, I mean, it is certainly there. I don't know if he has it top of mind, just knowing that, you know, a lot is predicated on being in the moment. And listen, the kid hasn't won anything yet. And I think that's part of it, is until that happens, what is the actual pressure? Like for Paul Feinbaum, and I know he forgot about a lot of very good quarterbacks there in college football history. Tim Tebow, you know, won what, a couple of national titles.
Yep.
He is as accomplished as it gets. You think of like a Vince Young. I'm just thinking of at Texas.
Yeah.
Like where are we comparatively? You know, they're our rival, Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield, in what he did. You have the Matt Leinarts of USC. I mean, Deshaun Watson, who was at Clemson. Joe Burrow, just recently, of what he did in LSU. Like, there's a lot of guys that have far better track records in history. Does Arch Manning have the capability to live up to that? Sure. But you got to get there first. And boy, do they have a slobber knocker to start the year.
Oh, man.
Here in Columbus, Ohio.
Yep. 3-point dogs there August 30th against the Buckeyes. Now, I would say this. We talk about correlated plays all the time in sports betting. Now, you could do one here. Texas is the second shot on the board to win the national championship at plus 550. Arch is 7-1 to win the Heisman. Now, can he win the Heisman, but Texas doesn't win the national championship? Or flip that. Can Texas win the national championship and Arch still doesn't win the Heisman? Like, out of that, correlated numbers are pretty comparable at 550 and 7-1. Which number would you rather have in pocket if you had to play one of those two?
Yeah, I guess I would take the national title one, just because I think when you look at that Heisman number, you know, I already have an Avery Johnson 50-1 in pocket, you know, just a someone sure. that is going to be so dynamic for Kansas State. John Mateer, quarterback now at Oklahoma. I think there's a couple other ones outside of that present better value. I would say that's the ticket I'd rather have, because I do think that Ohio State is a great chance to win that opening game. And then what does that national title number drift to a little bit for Texas? Does it get to 7-1? Does it get to 8-1? The rest of their schedule, at least early, is quite manageable. But yeah, I would want to see what, and even if they do win, Dave, we say this all the time, they get into that college football playoff, you can roll the money lines and you perhaps have a better, you know, chance to be a better odds payout than that original 550 of where they are right now.
And I agree. I would rather have the ticket, the shorter ticket on this one at plus 550 versus Arch Manning at 7-1, because there is a pathway that they still win it and he doesn't win the Heisman, that's for sure.
Yep.
That's always an interesting exercise. I did find this number to be interesting too for Texas. Just to have an undefeated regular season. Now, you mentioned that the first hiccup obviously would be Ohio State in week number one. But if they got over that hurdle, and yes, you're going to have some of those natural rivalries that we're always going to see. And obviously the SEC is still the SEC. But when you do have that win total juiced that heavily at minus -170 to the over to at least get 10 wins, and they, let's just say hypothetically, they clear that big hurdle week one against Ohio State, would you rather have that ticket to be undefeated in the regular season at 5-1? Is that long enough for you?
No, and I would have to believe that if you look at the potential money line matchups here, why wouldn't you just roll everything over? Okay,
yep.
You know, they're a small dog at Ohio State. There's probably not going to be a bettable money line for you at all whatsoever for San Jose State, UTEP, Sam Houston, but you can still roll it over if there is. You got to go to the swamp. DJ Lagway and company are undefeated at that point. You know, Texas probably is a small road favorite there. So again, you know, you have that. Then is that a potential look ahead spot to Oklahoma and the arch rivals there? Yeah, I just think it's much better if you roll it over and don't overlook my Vanderbilt Commodores.
Oh!
I say this tongue in cheek, but hey, no, then think about it. You got to go to Georgia.
Yep.
You have Texas A&M at the end of the year. Who the heck knows what that could look like? No, I don't want any of that. Just roll it over. And you get an astronomically higher payout than you would taking that 5-1.
That is such sage advice. Because again, on the money line price here against Ohio State, it's plus $1.20. So let's just say hypothetically, if you're trying to play that 5-1 to be undefeated in the regular season, that there's going to be value right there. If you win week one at plus $1.20 and then start rolling that over, by the time you even got to Georgia at November 15th, you're going to be I got to think you've well exceeded 5-1 at that point. I would think at least close to it, if not already exceeding it before you even get to the Georgia game. So I think that's a really good way. We talk about making better bets. That's a really good way to make a better bet without playing that 5-1 number. But overall, we do feel like the adage of Texas is back. We can say that confidently, right? We don't expect them to take some bizarre step back and not be back in the college football playoff at least, right?
I think you can do an easy parlay right now of Texas and Ohio State to both make the college football playoff. Go ahead and file it away for a rainy day. If you want to add a third team, you could probably put Georgia in there too. Barring something completely unforeseen, my friend, those three teams should be in the playoff no matter what.
Second highest odds there at minus -350 for Texas to be in the college football playoff. We all expect them to be back there once again. Right now, we've got our football special. The betting guide for the NFL is out. The college football betting guide is going to be coming out rather soon as well. So right now, $175 is going to cover you all the way through February, through the Super Bowl of this year, next year, 2026. So $175 when you sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here on this Thursday edition. Tomorrow, of course, is the 4th of July. And as Kelly Bidlin was kind enough to text us, Canada Day, you already knew it, was the first. Canada Day was 2 days ago on the 1st. So a federal holiday, Jensen? They all got the day off for Canada Day?
Yeah, I mean, they do celebrations. As I said, everyone wears red.
Okay.
It is a festive atmosphere there. It's usually one of their sellouts every year there for the Blue Jays. So
good on you.
Always a spectacle. They get the big flag just like we do,
yeah.
You know, for opening day and for July 4th too. So very, very cool to see.
Not too far from Canada is what's going. Well, what we had Detroit last week was the Rocket Classic. That's hop, skip and a jump there. Now down to the Quad Cities. We mentioned this here with the John Deere, the Gim Reaper, somebody we talked about with Wes Reynolds yesterday in the program, off to a really good start. So we have our rabbit for first round leader. Doug Gim right now is 4-under through 6 holes to begin play there. David Lipsky, Austin Eckroat. Right now, those guys are at 3-under par early in their rounds. Bo Hostler, Ryan Palmer, those guys right now at 2-under par. So waiting to see if our trophy house guys can start to get back in the fight here for us. But again, a lot of these guys have not teed off. This is very early so far over there at the Quad Cities. And again, next week, we'll be getting very, very close. 2 weeks to go here until we get over to the Open Championship, the last major of the year. Talk a little Major League Baseball here, and we're efforting to have Kevin Franson here to join the program here with us. But Jensen, we'll get to our best bets in the next segment here. But before we have Kevin on, just in bigger picture of the Nationals, a team I used to cover for a long time since their inception, you know, we talked a little bit about the Marlins and the Pirates, kind of these underbelly teams in the National League starting to play better baseball. What do you make of the Nats, kind of bigger picture? Are they heading in the right direction?
Yeah, certainly. And they'll have one of the bright young stars there in Atlanta. Would anticipate that James Wood, who has had a stellar individual season in and of his own right, is going to be a selection down there. Would love to see him do the home run derby, if at all possible. But again, we've talked for many weeks now about the results of that Juan Soto trade, right? It's C.J. Abrams, it's James Wood, it's Mackenzie Gore, Robert Hassel, who is a young, promising outfielder that's already had a cup of coffee this year in the big leagues. So you get, you know, you're hoping for at least one, if not two, of those big time prospects to materialize in these blockbuster trades. You can make an argument. It's already been three with Abrams, Wood, and Mackenzie Gore, and then with Robert Hassel in the fold for years to come. Buddy, it's looking way better. And the opportunity to have this team start to compete sooner than later, very much on the precipice there in our nation's capital.
Jake Irwin's going to be on the bump today here against the Tigers. They beat the Tigers yesterday. Dogs at home, as you can imagine, plus $1.24 for the Nats today against the Tigers. Mike Rizzo, of course, is the GM there in D.C. And I used to have a lot of conversations with Mike back in the day when he was the assistant GM. So, Jensen, those questions we mentioned, and Mike Palm asked you about them in hour number two. Again, you can check out the podcast wherever you might be if you missed any hour of this program. He asked you about maybe some of these aces getting moved. With the Nationals building off of that Juan Soto trade from years ago, you don't want to trade those assets, right? That's why you make those moves, and then you build around some of those guys like the Mackenzie Gores of the world. How much of it is, all right, we made those moves years ago with the bigger picture in mind, and now they're starting to come to fruition, versus, man, maybe I still have to move some of those guys and keep doing the same cycle here that we've seen in years past?
No, I think they're in that position now where this is obviously built for the future time. And as far as that rotation goes and just the youth that is in there, you think about Mitchell Parker's going to be 26 this year. Jake Irvin is almost 28 and a half. Mackenzie Gore, their ace now in the present and the future, is going to be 27 at the end of the season. So life is good right now from a youth perspective, and they get the sage veteran and Trevor Williams, who's 33 right now. So they're set up, and Kyle Finnegan, who's been a guy that has been a great stopper for them, huge in that closer's role. I'm sure many teams will call. We know it every single trade deadline, Dave. Back end bullpen help is always something that is looked for and is, in most cases, a hot commodity when you get going here in the next couple of weeks.
All right, so let's get to some of these best bets that we have already in pocket here. And of course, our best bets are presented to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. And some of those baseball plays that you have from the Daily Diamond earlier today, Jensen, for people that might have missed that segment, where are your leans here on a Thursday?
Yeah, so some official plays already. We are going to jump on your Metropolitans. We'll go a little alternate line minus one here against the Brew Crew, and do like the pitching matchup in and of itself. David Peterson against Jose Quintana. You saw that the Mets in the nightcap able to get to the Miz and Jacob Mizrowski and make it stand up. That day game, Freddie Peralta, opportunities there abounding for Milwaukee. They're able to extend it and be able to get at least that opener. But I do like the Mets. Also, like the Yankees, we mentioned our Daily Diamond, how Clark Schmidt has been very, very solid in his last four road starts, three runs or fewer allowed. I think that does continue today. Again, tough customer there in Chris Bassitt, but the way they made that comeback, unable to get it across the line, you're down eight, you find a way to level it, but the Blue Jays walk it off. I think if nothing else, Yankees got to try and save some face today. I think they're able to do that. You and I love offense. We'll look at the Rockies and the Astros, a little day game affair out there in the Mile High City. Do like the over 11, Brandon Walter against Kyle Freeland. That in and of itself, the Astros, I have that ticket 14-1 for most wins here in July. They're off to a great start, 2-0 thus far, and going for the series sweep this afternoon in Denver.
The Giants, I thought when you make the Devers trade and everything felt like it was going to, everything's just going to fall into place. They're still five games over 500. They're nine back at the Dodgers, but by the way, everybody is pretty far back now in the NL West. What do you make of their prospects today? And since the Devers trade, what do you make of the Giants' kind of bigger picture?
Yeah, it's been sort of a tough onboarding, if you will, for where the Giants' offense and that continuity goes. Although I do feel that they're going to figure it out, and potentially this schedule lightens up a little bit for them when they get the Bay Series coming up. And it's no longer the Bay Series because now Oakland is in Sacramento, but you get to go to Sacramento,
right.
and you have some favorable spots there. Remember, Luis Severino has been just downright dreadful there, and so they get him potentially on Saturday. Just figuring out, you know, how this offense can kind of coexist and get Rafi Devers going in the right direction. Listen, the pitching's been very good. I do expect that to continue. 13-4. The Giants are in the 17 Robbie Ray starts, including 6-2 on the road. That'll be the case in the series finale as they take on the D-backs deep in the desert tonight.
Okay, and again, we had Kate Constable on to begin hour number two talking WNBA. And you've got four tickets already in pocket. VSiN Pro subscribers have already had access on to those. And one of those in particular really sticks out to me. It's that Mystics and Links number that you hopped on that number, Jensen, a couple days ago. And the market must have been listening to you because we'll figure out if it gets home. But you clearly have the best of the number here.
It's good to be right sometimes, and hopefully this is that case, right? Okay, so earlier this week, we look at it at where the Mystics and the Lynx let us down big time, but hopefully they get back on the right side here. So this number was as low. We got it at 159.5, the under for that game. It was as low as 154.5. I'm seeing it DraftKings ticking back up just a tad to 155, but clearly a couple of possessions of a line value for us there. Other ones in pocket for people, Sparks and Liberty under 170.5. That's now down, I believe, to 168.5.
Yep.
It was ticked back up to 169.5. Under in that Storm and Dream game at 162, that's now down to 159.5. So a couple of good ones here, Dave. Let's hope for a lot of brick cities and not a lot of scoring in some of these WNBA affairs.
Again, you've kind of done the work that we're asking to do here and get ahead of the numbers for our VSiN Pro subscribers. Now, if the teams will cooperate, we'll be okay. By the way, right now we do have a great deal here that is set up. It's a $500 trifecta, if you will, from GBank and VSiN and First Bet. So when you do this $500 trifecta, you're going to have access to, well, let me see if I can find that here for you very quickly. You're going to get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet is going to give you a $100 deposit match. VSiN will complete that trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. That in and of itself is a $200 value. So that's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. Remember, this is a one-time promotion. It's limited to customers opening up a new account in response to this very offer. It's not going to apply to requests to convert existing accounts. So apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. But again, that is a $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Okay, we're going to talk more on Major League Baseball here in maybe if there's any ways when we come back here to look at the second half. We're already past that, by the way, through the 82 games, getting closer and closer to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game and the trade deadline. Are there any actionable plays out there for some teams that may be underperformed here that we can look ahead to the second part of the season and maybe find some good numbers associated with it? That is next year on VSiN by the Books. VSiN by the Books, Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here on a Thursday. Novak Djokovic right now, I believe that's center court out there at Wimbledon. He's up a set already. trying to entertain the people out there and see if Novak can get back to his winning ways. I'm sure they'll be updating those scores with Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin coming up next year on a numbers game. But right now, a real pleasure to welcome into the program Kevin Franson. Give him a follow on X at Kevin Franson. Does a great job covering the Nationals and joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Kevin, thanks for joining Jensen and I here. I'm not saying that Jensen made me aware of this, but we were talking about Clayton Kershaw getting a career strikeout number 3,000. Did he get a couple of those punchies against you?
Yeah, but I got him for a couple knocks, so I don't care. It happens. Ask Jensen what he would have done. No, he was too scared being in the American League on that whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, buddy. We were kind of having the discussion, too, that it's kind of crazy to think that the Dodgers at this point with all the injuries would have to rely on Clayton Kershaw for starts every fifth day. Obviously, you played out there out west as a Giant and have been heavily involved in the National League throughout your career. What does it mean to you seeing Kersh at this point in his career and kind of the Dodgers in your mind overall? Like, what is the staying power now for a group that has really had to overcome so many significant injuries already in their rotation?
Well, I think first and foremost, being a Giant, being someone that grew up in the Bay Area, hating the Dodgers and everything, I have nothing but love and respect for that guy. The amount, I think you look at the work that he puts in day out, right? Like in between starts, it is a thing. I think it's kind of tired sometimes. People talk about, oh, this guy works hard. This guy works harder than everybody. That's a fact. And so when someone puts in the time, has the talent, goes out and dominates, you have nothing but respect. And it's an incredible honor to have played against, be on the same field as, to get a couple knocks. I mean, I don't know how many guys have been on the beach for 2.5 weeks, get called back up to the big leagues and, 2 days later get a base hit against Clayton Kershaw. I did. So my bad on that one. That was a fact. But the staying power of the Dodgers, man, they took all these hits, right? They take all these injury hits, and yet they're just pulling away. Like, how scary is that to think about, like, with the amount of depth that they have had to accumulate over the last couple of years, but let alone this offseason, and to have to use it. Not every time that you accumulate all this talent, for the roster that you have, and you have to use it all and more, and they're doing just that. So is the staying power real for them? Yes, I think so, based on the fact that, like, we didn't really see him take a real big hit. Now, the question is going to be, to me, if Max Muncy's out for an extended period of time for his knee injury, I am a little bit worried on that because he was on a month and a half heater, 2 month heater?
Yeah.
If we're going to be, talking the gambling channel here, he's on a heater.
Well, Kevin, it's amazing to look. You mentioned all the hits they've taken, and yet they're still plus 240 to repeat as World Series champions. And it's not even close in the betting market. The Yankees are the next option at 7-1. Is there another – like, I keep waiting for the Padres to wake up in the NL West, and maybe some people are looking for Arizona. And even San Francisco, even after the Devers trade, they really haven't hit the stride that maybe people thought they would. Is that just more of a byproduct of they're in the wrong division, so it looks worse than it actually is? Or do you think those three teams could still make some play as wild card participants if they all get there?
Well, I think they all can as wild card for sure. But I feel like this stretch right here is showing what the Dodgers' prowess is as the NL West champion, right? With the Giants, you thought that the Devers trade would just continue to move things along right along that path of success that they were having because of the pitching staff. And they've taken a hit and – look, at some point, it'll click. Is it going to be too late? That's the question. And Devers is too good, right? We all know that. It's not one of those, like, he's just going to get comfortable, get Matt Chapman back here, shortly, I think. And that lineup looks a lot different with Matt Chapman in there. Now, with the Padres, they got the pitching. They have the hitting. They haven't done either at the same time this year, really, for consistent, for a lengthy period of time. So I sit there and I go, okay, who's more likely? Well, it's that team on the outside that's the Diamondbacks that continues to play better and better and better, and they've taken some hits as far as the injury side of it. I'm just going to sit there and say, like, I'm almost willing to say the Diamondbacks have a better chance based on they could get hot and stay hot for a while because I just like the way the style they play. But again, Corbin Carroll being out for a while, if they get him back, it could be something. But those three teams are all viable to make the postseason as far as a wild card.
Yeah, Afrenia, I told Dave that the exercise in the West would be if you like any of those teams, take their National League pennant odds because of the potential playoff matchups in the bracket and where you could get an ability to monetize that once you get to the LCS. Speaking of, a division you see
that's
all the time here in the
love it, Jensen.
Yeah. a division you see every day, buddy, the National League East. And you played in Philly. You know what it's like for that group. And Dave and I have kind of talked through the beginning of the season and kind of where this offseason was from a contractual standpoint. This may be a last dance feel, knowing that Schwarber and Real Muto and Castellanos, all free agents at the end of the year. From what you've seen overall with this group, and this rotation may be the best in all of baseball the way they're going right now, they are viable not only to win the National League East, but how far can you see Philly going and maybe moves they could potentially make before the trade deadline?
Ooh, it's going to be all bullpen for them. I mean, really, when you look at it, I don't know if they can surprise us on the position player side, but the starting staff is incredible. To think that Andrew Painter just waiting in the wings to add some more innings in there, Nola coming back at some point from his ankle stuff. I'm going to be honest. I have them winning the World Series. I still do. I had them at the beginning of the year just for the fact that, number one, we haven't seen a repeat champion since the three-peat Yankees. I'm going off of the numbers there. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do. Mm-hmm. You see all the hits that the Dodgers have taken. I'm still staying with it because that starting staff, especially with the anchor and you know where I stand with Zach Wheeler, Jensen, mm-hmm. which is pretty high. I know what everyone wants to say about Scooble and all this stuff, but I don't want anybody starting game seven, before him. I still think that we have a possibility of seeing a Wheeler Scooble game seven. That would be epic.
Wow.
Right. That would be the best thing ever. But, man, they're so good. And again, Harp's been awful for him all year. For him. Now, for us laymen, we would love to have his years, right? Like this year and considering the injury. If and when he gets hot, watch out. Because that's the part, right? Like we talk about Francisco Lindor leading the way for the Mets and doing his thing. When he goes, they go. Well, they've been going pretty well right now already without Harp being hot all season. So imagine when he gets hot. That's a scary thought.
Plus 750 for the Phillies, by the way, plus 750 for the Tigers. If we got that matchup in a game seven, I think everybody would sign up
for
that.
Wouldn't that be right? Sick?
Yeah, we sign up for that one right now,
awesome.
Kevin, if that was our game seven. I'm showing my age here, but I covered that team that you cover now here with the National C every day back when Frank Robinson and the expansion, and then obviously when they drafted Bryce.
You were for Jim Bowden. For Chip Bowden.
All those guys back in the day. And, you draft Steven Strasburg and you get Bryce Harper. And I remember the enthusiasm of the city, right? I with the number one pick for the Nats this year, is there a player that maybe can get that buzz back for D.C. baseball?
No. I apologize in saying that because there's only one Stras. There's only one Harp, right? In those years that were hasn't in Paul Skeens, right? Like there's three that you could sit there and say are the legitimate like runaway number ones. I don't see it, but like the Ethan Holliday thing is a real deal. I don't know where they're going to go with it. Can you imagine Jackson and Ethan being in the DMV? I think that would be awesome for everybody, for the family. I mean, as far as the travel would go, it'd be nice. There's a lot of different things that they could do. Kate Anderson, could be a useful pick there because he would be in the big leagues pretty quickly, I think. But it's hard to say. It's like a year removed, maybe a year, if they were the number one pick next year, how it'll be a little bit easier, I think, for number one picks. Just saying. But, this year, I don't know. It's going to be up in the air. I think it's going to be best fit as far as what they can do. Can they build on it? Because last year, you look at they saved a little bit in the first round with Seaver King and Luke Dickerson was their second round pick, who's an absolute monster stud shortstop, coming out of Jersey, that they were able to utilize that money on. But can they do that with the number one? I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be interesting over here in in Washington for that. But yeah, I just don't. It's with all due respect. You can say anything you want. I have to say it with all due respect. There's just not a Strasburger heart.
Yeah, and I love it. And that is fair. I mean, there are only one Steven Strasburg and then a Bryce Harper. Kevin, we appreciate the time, man. Good luck with the Nats the rest of the way. And I'm sure we'll catch up again soon and see if we can get some more digs in there. I mean, you get struck out by Kershaw. No shame in that. Jensen, great stuff as always. We got a numbers game coming up next.